Hello, and welcome to the seventh night of Millennial 2018. And we've got six hangouts this evening. So I'll just read out who's coming on this evening. The first, hold on a second. Right. So we've got quite a few. An hour from now, or 2 hours from now, it'll be, and I don't know how to pronounce this, I think it's Eke Looks live streams, then Cato's speech, then Why With a Purpose, then Dominion Movement New Zealand, and then Alec Larson finally. But first, it's Wife With a Purpose. Not Wife With a Purpose. Big Cat Kayla, my apologies. Kayla, welcome to Millennial.
Oh, well, thank you for the invitation, Woz. I really do appreciate it.
Well, you've become a bit of a fixture in. What would you say, the online right, the YouTube alt-right community? This year. So when did you start the channel? Because I first became aware of it, I think around, well, it was after the just after the internet blood sports sort of craze fad in January, February. I think I became aware of your channel at around about March or April. When did you start it?
Yeah, that's pretty much when I started. I just kind of saw a hole. Not, I don't want to say like, oh, there's a hole out there, that. But it was something to where, like you said, it was right after the blood sports thing had kind of fizzled out, and I noticed that a lot of these shows, when they would be talking to our guys, right, or even just people in general, it would either be a, kind of a colder interview, or it would be combative. It would be, a heated debate of some sorts. And I just thought, well, let's just have a conversation. Not trying to, the civil discussion thing, but just give someone a neutral platform to talk. So, yeah, I mean,
Hence the
somewhat.
name, a comfy tangent.
Yes. I tried to, make it as simple as possible. That's really what I go for. It's you start with one topic and then you end up, 6 miles down the road somewhere else. But it was a natural flow on how you got there.
And what was the immediate pickup? I mean, or was this something that people weren't used to? Because it's something that, as you say, was is not typical. There, I don't think there's anything else really like this.
Well, no, I mean your show is the only one that comes to mind. I mean, I was speaking with No White Guilt and the Great Order a couple days ago, and I said when I saw your schedule, it was like you were jamming 6 months of of like my work into 2 weeks, and and I was just like, I gotta tip my hat to Woz because that's quite the ordeal. But just in general, this style, right? This kind of one-on-one, relaxed, almost like getting to know someone, getting to become friends, that type of thing. That style, you're the only other one that I really see do that.
Well, I don't know. I don't know if I do that because to me, every video has a purpose and it like needs to have. Like, I'm sort of OCD about this. It's very important to me that there is a topic or a reason for that video as a sort of unique purpose that it serves. But and so what, I don't know if I do allow people to just display who they are, their personality, and so on the channel. I have to say, it's not necessarily a priority for me. My priority is the discussion, because I am the sort of INFJ, I guess. What's your type?
I think it's ENTJ. I think.
Right. Okay. I was thought I thought you were going to be INFP, but anyway, it doesn't matter. I was obviously completely off. To the extent I know that some people will be saying it's all a load of hogwash anyway, but I don't know. I think there's some. I think it's interesting. Anyway, where was I? What was I saying?
See, this is how the tangents start. Because I
Yeah.
was just about to bring up, well, that's all right. I kind of believe in horoscopes, and then we'd get off on that. But see, it's something that happens.
Well, I think the issue, what I was going to say was, I'm not sure. It obviously is when we've got a fairly small community as we have, and it's bigger than most of us realize, of course, but still, it's a fairly small galaxy. When you've got that, obviously, people do start wondering about the personalities that they see, and there'll be certain people who are very good at talking about ideas, but you start to think, well, what's he like in other ways? You know, what kind of music does he like, for example? Of course, Greg Johnson and I did a hangout on your channel about the music that we like. That's just one example. And I'm not sure. I'm not sure how many people, I mean, how do you find it? Do you find that most people are up for this kind of thing?
I think so. I mean, a lot of people are, they're normally just more interested in the guest than the topic, right? And so what I try to do is, well, I want the guest to be interested in the topic as well. And normally when, I mean, look, with you and Greg, you guys got onto music and I just let you guys go.
I mean, yeah, and I remember you were sat and I was worrying that we were sort of being too dominant or you didn't want to interject or something like that.
Well, I mean, I didn't, because you guys were having a great conversation and the audience was liking it. You guys were liking it. And sometimes it's better than just like going in and kind of redirecting the conversation, right? It seems like something that, look, if the guest is enjoying themselves, right? The audience is enjoying themselves. What are you going to do? You can't just go in and say, okay, well, we're going to make a right turn now and we're going to just deviate off of this. But I don't know. I like people to be comfortable and want to come back because we can always discuss something else another time.
Yeah, yeah. It does. It's funny because, I mean, of course, a part of this is also that, and this is going to sound dreadfully sexist off me, of course, but the fact is that there are more women involved in this scene even than there were this time last year, certainly more than there were a year before that, and certainly more than there were back in 2015. So this is obviously an effect that is going to be felt, you know, because men will talk about a topic or an issue or a concept for hours on end. Because that's what we're built to do. It's what we're designed to do, and it's what we get a thrill from doing. It's when we're switched on, at least, when we're sort of active, you know. But also there is this other dimension, which is traditionally encouraged by women, which is to just talk about other things, to sort of sit, you know, kick back, if you like.
Yeah, I mean, you know, it's kind of that idea that, you know, women will talk about 50 different things and, you know, our brains can be all over the place and, you know, at once it goes along with the multitasking thing, right? Yeah. You can talk to this person about that and this person about that. And you guys, you know, you've got that not tunnel vision in a negative way, right? It's, you have tunnel vision where you can actually focus. And, you know, with women, we're just here and there and everywhere.
But of course, also the presence of your channel will encourage other women to get involved, surely.
I would hope so. And I've always been pretty upfront about this, which is I do always want women to kind of see this and be like, hey, look at, you know, it's just a regular person. They're having just regular conversations. And kind of be encouraged to say, oh, well, maybe it's not a big scary place or whatever kind of vibe they may get. But then I look at the audience, right? I look at the, you know, kind of the demographics and, you know, mainly men from the US. And so it's like 2% women. The more subscribers you get, right, that little percentage just goes down. I don't know, but I do kind of hope that more women will kind of come in, but they'll find a place that they can contribute, right? They won't try to mimic what men are doing. There's no point in women coming in and saying like, yeah, I'm going to be another millennial woes, or I'm going to, you know, I don't know. I think you find your strength and you play off of it. You don't try to just imitate what someone else is doing.
I think it's very difficult to imitate what someone else is doing and get away with it.
Yeah.
Because each person's style is so unique. It's so different that it would just be obvious. And I think, and of course, inevitably you wouldn't do it as well as that person does it. So I don't think it would take off. I don't think it would work. I mean, there have been one or two occasions when I thought, I've watched some new channel and thought he's sort of copying my style. But of course, you've also got to leave some room for that, because the fact is at the start of it, when I started, I was sort of copying Davis MJ Arini's style. to some extent. I mean, I was definitely inspired by that. That was the format that made me think I could do that. And so, yeah, I mean, obviously people are going to take their lead from someone else to some extent. But there have been one or two occasions where I've thought that guy is just blatantly doing what I do. And there's insincerity about it.
Well, you know, you have to almost be careful in how you kind of present yourself, right? Because you want to make sure that, I don't know, people are very protective. And that's why I was so surprised that everyone was so nice, right? Like, I got such a welcome reception when I was kind of joining into this online community. But yeah, I, you know, a lot of people are protective of this. And when someone new comes along, you're really going to kind of want to question them. Who are you? Where'd you come from? You know, what do you really believe? Are you here to, you know, start some infighting or, you know, kind of make us look crazy or make us look bad? And I think a lot of people just naturally want to fight against that. But I don't know. I mean, it is one of those things to where you can only know so much about someone, and you just kind of have to look at what they put out and say, okay, well, they're not a subversive, or they're, you know, maybe they're probably not a Fed, like things like that. Because I know a lot of people get they get worried about that. And especially.
Oh, yeah, absolutely. This is a perennial suspicion and paranoia, which is justified, unfortunately. I wish it weren't, but it is justified. Yeah. And every new channel or blog, podcast, whatever, is a new center, a new attractor. And so, you know, obviously people are going to think, well, what is it that I'm being attracted towards?
Well, yeah, I mean, it really is, because I kind of see that, and I understand, but at the same time, like, we just have to use our own discretion. If someone is putting out a message that makes us look like lunatics, right, is if they are, you know, kind of portraying themselves as a representative of a movement or of a set of ideas, and they're crazy, you know, you just disassociate, just don't engage them. Don't do videos about how they're a Fed, just disengage. Make sure everyone else around you disengages.
Yeah, I think that's the case. I mean, I don't make videos attacking people generally. I think the only time I've done that was with Kraut and Tea last year. But that was really the movement, the skeptic movement of which he was a part. And he was the central voice there, certainly the most belligerent voice there. And so it was sort of necessary to do that. I don't think I've made any other videos attacking people. I did one about Mike Isaacson, but that wasn't really an attack. What's the point of attacking? It's just kind of stupid. This is where the social side can really become very toxic. And this is what I worry about, that people end up becoming obsessed with, it's like the equivalent of office politics, where people are just deciding, I'm going to be his rival, and I'm going to try to fuck him up so that I can have his position. You know? And I've heard of, literally heard of that, a guy plotting to do that. To me, I was his first target. I mean, it's just pathetic. Instead of building up his own platform, he literally wanted to bring other people down so that he could rise to the top or whatever. I mean, it's absolutely ridiculous and insane. But this is a general, not general, but it's a fairly widespread thing. This idea of, of the office politics, the sort of infighting. And it's something I constantly try to discourage. I don't really know why there's so much of it. I think there's a lot of excess energy. And by excess, I don't mean people are too energetic. I mean, their energy isn't being spent in productive ways. So they just end up getting frustrated. And it's very understandable. It's human. But unfortunately, the effect it has is very destructive. It's detrimental.
Well, I mean, just frustration in general, right, with people. You know, people today, I want to say, you know, people in our movement, and I don't know, I think the movement, the kind of the edges, right, that define it have become a little frayed. I don't know. That's my own opinion.
That's definitely true. I mean, yeah. We can talk about the alt-right. What does that even mean anymore? Yes. I do think that it's probably time to retire that label. Not just because it's become toxic, but actually because it's no longer our property. We cannot control it anymore. It's now the mainstream media's plaything, and they're applying it to people who certainly would not have been in that label a year ago. It's become meaningless, actually, which is a real shame, because for a while it meant something important and quite special back in 2015, and I think that that's just completely fallen away now.
Well, no, I mean, didn't they, maybe I'm wrong on this. Didn't they say that, like, Lacey Green and PewDiePie, like, they're all right?
Yes.
I get the PewDiePie thing. Like, I could understand how they, you know, made it from point A to point B on that one. But Lacey Green, I haven't even heard her name in, like, a year, but my
God. I mean, it's so stupid. I can't even believe that anyone would say it. But, yeah, she was... I think she was sort of cozying up to Sargon of Akkad for whatever reason. And so because he has appeared on my channel and I've appeared on his, therefore we are politically aligned. And therefore, because Lacey Green was cozying up to him, Sargon's alt-right, and she was cozying up to him, so she's alt-right as well. And this is utter insanity. At that point, you've got the left really eating itself. Like, anyone who is not absolutely ideologically conformant and is not pushing away everyone else is themselves a witch.
Well, it's that, you know, kind of, they just have to keep progressing down a certain path, and anyone that was on board a year ago, right, if they're not as far left at that same point or even further, then they are automatically a white nationalist supremacist bigot and probably a transphobe, you know, something like that. You have this idea that if feminists can be alt-right, and we're not even talking about, like, the trans exclusionary, you know, types, we're just talking about regular sex ed degenerate feminists, that they're going to be that Jordan Peterson or Dave Rubin. It seems like either people are just ignoring what the definition of alt-right was, or they are, you know, yeah, they are trying to redefine it.
Well, yeah, I think the mainstream media has established that alt-right equals bad. And so that now they're associating anything that they don't approve of with alt-right. In the same way that they established hate speech is an exception to free speech. That's the special magic box. If it's in that box, then it cannot be allowed freedom. So there, well, having established that, you then add as many things as you can into that box. So suddenly we're not free to say very much. And I think in the same way, the term alt-right is now their instrument. And so I wish it weren't so, because, you know, for a long, long time, I tried to defend the term and sort of rehabilitate it and so on, because as I saw it, it was something valuable. It represented something healthy and good a few years ago. But I didn't want it to get sullied and wasted. But I think that, well, the mainstream media is just so powerful that we can't really control this. They are able to, over and over again, associate it with whatever they want it to be associated with. And in terms of attitudes, mentalities, and so on. And that's it. Well, so yeah. they own it now.
And so it kind of just makes me wonder, okay, well, where next? Right? Because for the most part, the parameters are the same. Right? What makes a person part of our group? And what makes them excluded? Those things are the same. But, you know, I mean, in terms of taking a new label, we have certain people in the movement that are seen as leaders, and they still adhere to that name. I think they really, you know, I mean, I get it. It's, you know, alt-right.
Well, it's useful to have a label. You know, it's useful to have a sort of, and the thing is, it gave us a collective, or at least a sense of collective power, solidarity, unity, and so on. That's the whole point of having a label. So, yeah, I can understand why people want one. And the other thing is that whatever label we now associate with will also be demonized. It'll go through exactly the same process. Yeah. Well, if the mainstream media need to do that, if it's advantageous for them to do it, it might be that they're content just to have the alt-right label that they can throw around. And I don't know. I suspect that any new label that people associate with will go through the same treatment. So it's a very, I have really no idea what we should do. I don't know.
Well, yeah, because if you start, if you know, you're like, well, we ended up at this point from that point, and so we're just going to restart. I mean, yeah, are we just simply rewinding the tape, and it's going to play out right back?
Yeah, exactly. It's all going to happen all over again. I mean, I like the term. I'm scared to even say it because by doing so, I will nominate it for demonization. But I do like the term dissident right because I think it's much broader. It brings in more people. It is more varied and therefore even more difficult for them to pigeonhole and pin down, which was the good thing about the term alt-right in the first place. It didn't mean white supremacy. It didn't mean neo-Nazism. It didn't even mean white nationalism. It was something much more vague, and it actually really was much more vague. Like in 2014, 2015, it really did not just mean white nationalism. That was a part of it. And, well, I mean, there were even people in the movement who weren't even white nationalists. But it was generally a thing. But it wasn't the only. It was very far from the only thing. It was very far from the only concern of the alt-right. And then later on, it became the only thing. And so to some extent, I think adherents of the label colluded with the mainstream media in devaluing the label, and you know, that's very regrettable.
Well, and this is something that I've noticed in the left is, or just the main, you know, kind of like, I don't even want to say mainstream, I'll just say the left, right? Anything, it, you know, in general, it's really, really good at this, like, same, you know, set of steps every single time, which is they'll kind of just pump out, you know, or they'll, you know, it's kind of like you oversupply the market with one thing, right? And then you devalue that one thing, and then a devalued product is easily replaceable. And they did that with alt-right, right? Everything is alt-right. This is alt-right. That is alt-right. And then alt-right really means nothing because it's an umbrella so big that it can shelter everyone. And, you know, eventually it can just be interchangeable with anything, right? Because it's covering all these different factions. It can mean white nationalist. It can mean Klansman. It can mean, you know, alt-light. It can mean a, you know, a Jew that likes borders. Anything, a nice Jewish person, I meant, that likes borders. It can mean any of those things. And they do this with everything, right? It's, I don't know, it's something that they're extremely good at. And I think they would be able to do that with any other label that we not only took the time to think up, but as a collective, agreed upon.
Yeah. I mean, I know that when any label, and there are some people who have done that, but then, of course, again, the mainstream media simply decides, no, we are going to, you are going to be associated with that label. So you can squirm, but, you know, you're fucked.
Yes, they will physically just force you under the umbrella. That's absolutely what will happen. Every single time. I don't know, when you look at people like Jordan Peterson, and you know, he's is he one of our leaders? I mean, will him and Lacey Green be leading us into a 1,000-year you know, super state? I don't know. Something about it just doesn't seem.
No, I know. But of course, they do have like Jordan Peterson and his friends have put together the intellectual dark web. And you know, I don't want to counter signal. I see, I'm always saying that we should not attack potential allies and all this, or even not even allies, just people who can be useful to us tactically. But really, Jordan Peterson and the intellectual dark web, I mean, it's such a wanky name. And I don't like how it, the word dark especially, because obviously what they're implying there is that this is dangerous. These ideas are dangerous. And I tell you, there's nothing dangerous about it at all. It's what liberals believed 10 years ago. That's yeah. really all that the internet, the dark web amounts to. The idea that is, but I mean, the thing is, maybe they're correct and that actually is dangerous in this day and age. Like 10 years on, the very same ideas are now, you know, haram.
Well, it's that idea.
Maybe they are.
Pushing the Overton window, but not actually pushing it, right? Just, you're moving the window just a millimeter to the right. And I'm sorry, like the intellectual dark web is the cringiest. I mean, like they did a photo shoot along with it, like where they're hiding in shrubbery. Like it's the cringiest thing ever. And I'm sorry, but like when I hear dark web, I don't think of intellectuals. I just...
And there's so, again, there's just so much money behind it. I mean, look at that photo shoot. Clearly, that was not cheap. And you've just got to be suspicious.
You have to. I mean, that's the thing. You know, people will wonder, you know, and I always laugh at this because people will look at like a show like this where it's just a hangouts that YouTube provides. And they're like, where are they getting the money to do these hangouts? And you're like, it literally costs nothing. Like, I'm already paying for my internet. But then you'll see something like that. And you'll see this photo shoot and they flew everyone out to one location and they're paying for their hotels and their meals and their transportation. And you're like, that cost a pretty penny. Now that you can question, right? Where are they getting this money from? And, you know, has their message changed, right? The bigger that they got, has their message changed? I mean, with Jordan Peterson, you know, especially, I gave him time. Like, because... You don't want just someone to pop onto the scene and then you start accusing them of things and say, oh, you know, you're not doing things right. You give them time. You see, okay, are they going to progress? Are they going to, you know, will their ideas evolve? And with him, it's been quite the opposite.
Yeah. Right? His ideas have become much more narrow, much more narrow. I mean, he's very compared to what he was 10 years ago. Then like in the late 90s, you can see these lectures where he was actually genuinely a thinker. At this point, he's a complete idea. I mean, he's an ideologue, and it's actually really quite boring what he's saying. I'm surprised. I don't really know. Well, he's very verbose, and I think that you know plays in your favor as a public intellectual.
Well, he is someone that, you know, I mean, yeah, like you said, right? When you actually look at his speeches from back in the day, or his lectures, you could tell he was thinking as he was speaking, right? He was not just reciting, you know, almost, it was just kind of like, he had this script, right? These are the points that I talk about, especially when I'm in public, because who knows what he says in private? We can never know. But while in public, this is what I will talk about. These are the points I will stick with. And then there will be things that I just can't. I just can't. And we've seen that with him. And I understand a lot of people do get upset that on YouTube, you'll have people that cannot discuss certain things, right? Certain people or ideas or anything like that, they can't be named just out of self-preservation, not because you disagree or anything like that.
Yeah, of course. And I'm in that position as well. You know, we all have limits because we don't want to lose what we've built up. And it's unfortunate. It really is unfortunate, actually, because it does sort of push you towards a certain hypocrisy.
Yeah.
But the fact is that after 5 years, no, I don't want to lose this channel. Forgive me. I'm only human. But yeah, go on with what you were saying.
No, but that's a big thing. And, you know, kind of this idea that, like, you have to have some ground rules, right? This isn't just a free-for-all. I mean, it of course it'd be fun, right? If we were able to just have throwaway channels that a lot of people would be aware of, that'd be fantastic. But it takes time to kind of work these things up, and it takes time to kind of get your name out there. And plus now you're hosting content that other people have been a part of, and you don't want that to all just disappear.
Of course not. I mean, every channel becomes a sort of home for, and not just the person who runs it, but people who, you know, come and visit it every day and so on. It's a community thing. And as you say, you can't just switch it off and then on again. It takes ages to reestablish any online presence, even when you're allowed to reestablish it. You know, on some platforms you're not allowed to. On YouTube, you do seem to be allowed to, but you know, it's very far from instantaneous.
Well, and you see that, I mean, with anyone, right? Which is, they'll, like you said, they'll allow you to bring your channel, well, to start a new channel, right? Well, you can start again. We're not totally banning you off the internet, and the numbers don't match up. I mean, people will think that they're still subscribed, and they won't be. You'll see it with Twitter as well. And a lot of people, it's just simply, okay, well, we'll erase you temporarily because they know that that's a really, really big hit. And I know that that happened to you on Twitter. And I'm sure you're, you know.
Well, it's, I mean, I don't want to talk about the Twitter thing.
Sorry.
Yeah, of course. And you know, other people have gone back onto Twitter, and it never lasts long. It never survives. I mean, we could name names. The point is that at that point, you are no longer welcome there. And if you do return, you're basically a dead man walking. You're just waiting to be shut down. So it's just dreadful. And that applies to, I think, most online platforms. It's the person themselves who is no longer welcome. It's not just their account that's shut down. They are, that's it. Now, uniquely with YouTube, I've said this before with other people, you are able to create a new channel. And I'm not going to name names, but there are people who've created a new channel and actually surpassed what they had established the first time. But it's a huge amount of work and time to do that. And I don't think I would actually reestablish it. I don't know. Maybe I would. It depends if I find a new lease of life. Right now, I feel I don't want to lose this.
Right. I think a lot of people kind of like wonder, okay, well, if that happened, what would I do? Do you just kind of, you know, I mean, so say you go off into the countryside and you just live your life and you're like, well, that was that part, right? I did that for a little and it was really good. And now I'm just going to go be a normie in the woods or in the suburbs or something like that. Or do you say, okay, well, I'll take this as a challenge, right? All right. So YouTube, do you want to fight? We'll fight. I think everyone, they kind of ponder that over in their head. All right. Well, what would I do?
I wonder myself, yeah. Of what would I do? Because the thing is, part of your importance, your value, let's say your worth as a YouTuber is the number of people who are subscribed to you. And so if you lose, that's like with a Twitter account, you know, you'll tweet something to someone knowing that, well, he's got loads of followers, so he'll retweet it and that will signal boost it. Same thing with a YouTube channel. So what would be, to some extent, what would be the point of supporting me if I lost the channel and 50,000 subscribers? And this applies to anyone. You might still like the person, but you know that they can never be as useful again, not unless they reestablish that presence again. People are going to be ruthless because they have to be.
Yeah. No, I mean, that's the, you know, kind of the thing, which is how much do you have? I don't want to say like riding on this, but there's a whole bunch of different aspects involved. I mean, whether people are putting out content so that they can actually make a living from it, whether they are putting out content and they're actually just making friends. And I get it. There are no friends on the internet. I know. But, you know, they're kind of our, they're kind of our friends on the internet. And whether you're doing that to kind of build your own sense of community to replace the one that you don't have in real life because you live in, you know, what is now a third world, you know, hellhole. Or, I mean, there are different things that people get out of this. And I do think that you just have to take that into consideration. And kind of see what cards you have on the table and what can be played.
Yeah, somebody in the live chat said, MW, we will always lift you back up. Don't worry, son. Which is that's very kind of you. Like if I lost the channel and so that's very nice of you to say. So I appreciate that.
There really are nice people out there, aren't there?
There are. I mean, I remember when I got doxxed, there was so much kindness and generosity. So many people, not just donating money, but I mean, that was a lot of the generosity there, but also people sending me messages of support and, you know, kindness, well wishes. And I was amazed just how much came in, how much kindness came in. Like, there was a lot of people, hundreds of people wishing me well and, you know, worrying about me. And I didn't realize, because you don't really know what goes on the other side of the screen. So you don't realize, oh, people really do care about me. And the same thing two months ago, I had a sort of crisis. And so many people sent me advice and tips and so on. And I wasn't prepared for how much of it there was going to be. I didn't realize. It's a strange relation. Being a YouTuber, there's just no instruction manual for it. There's no precedent for it. You don't know what to expect, and you don't know the effect that you're having, and it's impossible to gauge it, really.
No, I it'd be nice if there was kind of a manual, right? I have to admit, it'd be kind of nice. But for the most part, I mean, you just have to let things, like, there are always going to be people that just, they've kind of made their mind up. They're just not going to like you. And you're like, okay, that's fine. I get it. Like, it's fun to troll people, you know?
You can't expect everyone to like you. Sometimes someone is just not going to like your body language or the words you insist on using all the time or your way of speaking or whatever, you know?
No, that's exactly it. And so you kind of just have to say, okay, well, you let the bad just shrug off, and then you take the good with a grain of salt, right? You're never too special to not get hate, and then you're never too special to only get love. And I mean, I don't want to be a jerk and say you're not special, but, you know, I mean, in the grand scheme of things, I don't know. I think that's something that I always remember. And it sounds weird, I know, because I'm saying it out loud as I'm thinking it. Think about things before you say them, too. There's my piece of advice, because I don't do that enough.
Yeah, it's true. I mean, people are only people at the end. I remember just before we started this, I was looking over the comments for one of the streams last night, the pre-recorded streams that I put up last night, and someone was saying that I wasn't coming up with enough new ideas in response to the guest. And I said, well, look, you can only have the chemistry that you have with that guest. It's not like you've got to work with what's there, you know. People are very fickle. That's the other side of it. And I, you know, for the sake of balance, it's amazing how somebody always, whatever you do, somebody criticizes it, you know. There was one guy, somebody sent me a screenshot from 4chan, and there was a guy moaning about the way that I light cigarettes. I was like, could you light your cigarettes in a different manner, please? Because it's just so awful the way you do it. It's a funny thing. I mean, this does bring it home to us that it is a very social thing that we're involved with. Even though it's obviously the sort of currency of it is ideas and concepts and all that, topics, strategies, etc. The medium is an extremely social one, which, you know, goes off in all sorts of other directions.
No, I mean, that's that's something that I always find really funny, because I'll have little things that I'll say, you know. The thing is, that's one of the big things that I say, you know. So the thing is, or, you know, stupid things like that, and I'll point them out, and then the audience, they point them out, and you just have to be like, you just have to laugh about it. Like, yeah, that's, for whatever reason, that is one of my idiosyncrasies, or that's what I say. And, you know, for you, that's how you light cigarettes. And I don't know, I mean, sometimes I think people, they always just want to poke and just see, like, will I get a reaction out of this, and can I get you to change your behavior? And just to see, right, if I point out that you say this, will you become self-conscious enough to stop saying it? It's like a little experiment that they're doing. And you kind of have to point out and say, I know what you're doing.
Yeah, I know. So to end on a more positive note, what do you, that's a very broad question, but what do you enjoy about being a YouTuber, and how has it changed your daily life?
Oh, well, I mean, one of the things that I, it sounds so cheesy, I know, so bear with me. One of the things that I really enjoy is that I've been able to have conversations with people that a year ago, and never, ever in my wildest dreams could I have ever thought for half a second that, you know, you'd ever speak to these people. I think that that's a huge, huge thing is that if you, you know, and another thing that I, you know, was kind of like solidified, which is if you ask people something, the most they can say is no, right? Like if you start doing something, you know, and you ask them, would you like to come on or would you like to join me? Yeah, the most they can say is no. And if they do, like they do. I don't know. Yeah, just really being able to actually talk to people, meet people that share my ideas, and you don't have to always worry about, am I going to say something that offends them? And whoever thought that they'd like be able to talk to Jared Taylor or Kevin McDonald or,
oh, you know? I mean, I remember the first time I spoke to Jared Taylor. It was at the end of 2015, and I can't remember how this was done, but yes, I do remember now. And I ended up phoning the New Century Foundation, and I actually had to telephone them and asked to speak to Mr. Taylor and all the rest. And suddenly his voice was at the end of the phone, and it was Jared Taylor.
Yeah, hello. I can't do a Taylor. I can do a Pierce, but not a Taylor. But it's so distinct. It's so nice. But I know that we have this scheduled for about an hour, and so I'm going to help wrap this up myself, because that's always nice. I get distracted and I go off on tangents. But I'd say that that's probably one of the best things. And for the upcoming year, taking this month off, got some good IRL stuff, whatever you want to word it as, happening. But start back up in January and get the show going again. But nothing set in stone just yet.
Okay. All right. Excellent. Well, I think that was gone for about 45 minutes, I think. So let's keep it nice and short and concise and leave it there. So, okay, this was... do you go by Big Cat Kayla or Kayla?
Oh, you can just call me Kayla.
Right. I that's what I thought. Yeah. This is Kayla from Big Cat Kayla. And thank you very much for taking part. I think it's... now, obviously, it's quite... much more laid back than most of the streams that I'll be doing on Millennial. So it's nice to have this.
I've enjoyed it thoroughly.
Okay. Excellent. So please go and take a look at our channel. It's linked in the description. And in the meantime, I will be back. I've forgotten already who the next one is.
Eki Lux.
Thank you. In about an hour from now. And so I will see you then. In the meantime, thank you, Kayla, for taking part.
Thank you.